Please be seated.
Good morning again. I saw you all here listening very attentively to the last argument. We did set two Clark County cases in a row. No coincidence, even though one's criminal and one's civil. All right, the next case the court will hear is number 65143, Palmieri versus Clark County. And Mr. Potter?
May it please the court, Cal Potter, okay. C.J. Potter.
And your associate?
My son and associate, okay. Appearing on behalf of Judy Palmieri, who's also present.
Where
court,
is she? Okay, good morning. Okay.
Knowing that the court is familiar with the facts of the case, I want to focus on why the district court erred in granting summary judgment. This case, we're looking for a straight application of Franks versus Delaware. In this particular instance, what I believe that happened with the court is they did not look at the facts from a standpoint of the plaintiff in this action as to what actually occurred. The unequivocal statements made by the real Caitlin Nichols shows that, in fact, she never made any complaints. The district court made that finding in her order, but seemed to look at other issues rather than an application of holding the material parts of the affidavit, the first paragraph dealing with Don Stockman's statement that she had spoken with Caitlin Nichols. In reality, Ms. Stockman admitted in her deposition that if, in fact, this was not true, then all of this would have been false or fictitious. So you have a situation here where if you pull out the statements attributed to Caitlin Nichols in the Stockman affidavit, then there is not probable cause to issue the warrant. And what is important in terms of that statement is that Don Stockman admits that the reason she did not follow up on the identification of the individual that was supposed to be Caitlin Nichols, that it was pursuant to a county policy.
Mr. Potter, what if those statements are actually accurate and that a person was impersonating Ms. Nichols, but everything she said was accurate? Would you still then strike all those statements because the name was false?
Yes, because what you, and I know as a district court judge, you looked at applications for warrants on many occasions. What you have to look at is whether there is a foundation for the truthfulness and the veracity of the statements that are made. And I think what's important here, looking at it from a county standpoint, in terms of the Monell claim and the issues dealing with Gillette versus Delamar, the ways that you can prove a claim for against the county is that, one, the policy itself was unconstitutional, or if, in fact, there is a ratification by an individual. Clearly, what we know from the Don Stockman testimony, as well as the testimony of Officer Harney, is that there is a policy not to check the complaints. They accepted.
But where in any law, I mean, any authority that says that if it's a citizen informant, and here you have somebody that calls in, leaves a phone number to the city, then it goes to the county, has the person's name, phone number, then they fax in a written complaint, presumably they have the receipt fax number. What authority do you have that then, based on a citizen informant, not an anonymous tip, not somebody they don't know, confidential informant, but a citizen informant, which is in the law presumed to be reliable, what authority then do you have that suddenly law enforcement, or in this case, an administrative agency like animal control, what authority says that they have to go out and do a whole separate investigation to determine the identity of the complainant?
Well, the argument is on in terms of either in the civil rights context, the deliberate indifference, or the reckless disregard, because you don't have that situation here.
But Don Stockman said she or I'm sorry, your client even said in a deposition that she didn't believe Dawn Stockman had any ill will towards her.
But she said that she didn't, she believed that the malice came from the prior arrests and that Stockman told her that, in fact, they had a discussion and this was the first time they were going to get something against her. So her statement is taken out of the context of the malice that was involved in this particular case. That's a factual question, Your Honor, and where the court made the error is they didn't look at that factual question. She wants to make a decision as a district court judge, not as the summary judgment, and not to look at the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs, which she's bound to do by the law of this court, as well as the federal cases that deal with civil rights. I think the same is true for the state tort claims, but that didn't occur.
But it has to be more than the alleged victim's opinion. There has to be actual evidence that would have triggered in the mind of the officer, in this case, Ms. Stockman, hey, then maybe there's something that's not quite right here. I need to investigate further before I seek this warrant.
Well, there has to be some reliance in terms of making the report to the district court judge in the application that, in fact, she had talked to her. She did not talk to her. And the substitute analysis that, well, it could have been an anonymous, that, those aren't the facts of this case.
Mr. Potter, do you think that there's a difference as far as the standard? Here you've got, for example, in obtaining an administrative search warrant, you've got an administrative warrant, perhaps, county code, they're looking at just the welfare of the animals versus, you know, criminal cases that we're all familiar with where you're looking for the fruits of the crime, you're going to rip up people's pillowcases and you're going to go into their drawers, take off their, you know, pill bottles and look for dope. It's a different type of case, isn't it?
No. And the reason it's not is because they're going into the house.
Well, what more could they have done on an investigation, besides an identity investigation, what more could they have done here for any district court judge? We've all three of us have been DAs before looking over warrants. We've all been district court judge looking over warrants. What more could animal control do to ensure, besides going inside and looking at the dogs, that, I mean, it's not like they're going to do an undercover investigation. What more could they have done on an administrative warrant?
Simply, and it's not just because it's an administrative warrant, but what they could have done and what they should have done is they should have done some type of face-to-face identification, get some type of information from the individual, find out whether
in fact
they actually said
that.
The
last time she told them that they couldn't go into the house when they smelled a dead animal.
They didn't smell a dead animal, but you have a constitutional right. That's why we're here. You have a constitutional right not to cooperate with individuals that are on a witch hunt. And what the record shows.
I'm asking you, if she had gone there, Dawn Stockman knocked on the door, and Ms. Palmieri says, well, you'll have to go get a warrant, just like the last time, and now they go get a warrant. What more could they have done in this case?
Well, they could have gone out there and done that type of situation. They didn't do it. They assumed and provided information that not only was incorrect as to Caitlin Nichols, but was incorrect as what had occurred out at the Grand Canyon facility, Park Avenue Pets. That wasn't correct either. And Officer Harney, who had submitted all these, talked about that it was actually a biannual inspection. But what's important here, Judge, from a policy or safety standpoint, these officers are not armed. They're going into people's houses, and in this situation, they're going into her home, back through the back door. She's up in the shower. She hears something downstairs, goes downstairs. I mean, this is a very dangerous situation, not only for her, but for the officers. You don't want them involved in a situation where they're in danger either. So I would submit that it's the same probable cause that accrues in a criminal case, because that's what they were trying to do. They did a full search of the house. The animals were out in the garage. But what's important here is the fact that there wasn't any policy, practice, or procedure that was done. So there's a ratification by the county as to the actions that were taken by
this
individual.
This is an appeal from a grant of summary judgment. So the most important thing is to identify what are the issues of fact and what are the questions of law. All right. In a 1983 action, you've got a lot of mixed questions of fact and law. The validity of the search warrant is mixed questions of fact and law. The reasonless. What are the factual issues here? I mean, you know, on all these questions, all this discussion, we're kind of blurring together a bunch of issues, but which ones are the questions of fact that you think are in dispute?
Well, the fact deals with the identity of the individual. This affidavit tells the court that she spoke with Caitlin Nichols. She did not. And that is the first thing. The information, secondly, contained with their...
All right, let's even assume... So here's the question. Let's even assume for a second, assuming the facts most favorable to Palmieri, let's assume that there's a misrepresentation of fact in the search warrant affidavit, that the person that Officer Stockman spoke with wasn't actually Caitlin Nichols, it was somebody else, okay?
Right.
Just because there's an error doesn't mean that the search warrant's invalid. Search warrants, you know, sometimes have errors in them. What about this makes it unreasonable?
The fact that they didn't do any investigation as to the identity of the individual, nor any confirmation as to what is related in here.
And who makes that call? Is that a question of law or a question of fact?
It's a question of fact for the jury. And that's what the Drummond case from the Ninth Circuit tells us. On most of these issues, they're fact-driven. So you have Don Stockman trying to testify that what she did was correct, and that the identity, she still believed that was the person, but that's not correct. And the information about the fecal matter, not true. No mats, no breeding. You know, what's really interesting here, too, and it's not necessarily directly on this issue because it would be brought up later, is there's no report. Stockman doesn't have a report. She doesn't have this complaint that's supposed to have been filed by this individual. So you have a situation where you're when you're looking at whether this is done intentionally or in bad faith, you have subsequent action here under Larez that would be another violation in terms of what was done subsequent to the conduct. And I would submit to your honors that you have a situation here that it doesn't meet the standard that would be required for a search warrant because the animals were not in the condition. They took two older animals, and it's done all at the time that this new ordinance comes in. It looks like it's a situation where they decided they were going to try and test this new ordinance. Ms. Palmieri had a long history of situations with the county, and they decided to make an example of it at that point in time. I would just touch on the state tort claim is under the Gobert standard. There is not a situation here where there is a policy, economic, there's certainly a judgment. I would cite you to Judge Pro's decision in Huff versus the City of North Las Vegas, and then I would ask to reserve my additional time.
All right, you have 3 minutes reserved. Thank you very much, Mr. Potter. All right, Mr. Christian, I wanted to ask you first how it feels to be here.
Pardon me?
How does it feel to be here?
It feels great to be here.
Your first time in this court.
It's a pleasure to practice in front of the new court.
And aren't you doing mostly appellate work?
No, I mostly do litigation. Okay. I'm in the civil division of the district attorney's office, which is in a separate place in a separate building, and we do separate things from the criminal prosecutors.
Okay. Were you involved in this then throughout the trial court level?
I was not, because my predecessor, Michael Foley, with the district attorney's office, retired. So I inherited this case from him when I left my law firm and came to work for my longtime client, Clark County.
You probably noticed in the last proceeding, the lawyers that were here were the same ones that were the trial lawyers, and so they were talking about things that happened during the district court proceedings.
True. Well, I did come into the case when Mr. Foley was leaving. I did attend the hearing before Judge Sturman in which Mr. Foley argued and Mr. Potter argued the final motion for summary judgment that was ultimately granted. So I came into the case with plenty of time to understand what had happened below. I wasn't at the depositions, but of course I've read them.
All right. Go ahead with your argument then.
All right. Well, good morning again, and may it please the court. Again, my name is Matthew Christian, and I represent Don Stockman and Clark County. I think the court has identified the seminal issues in the case. Let me start, if I may, with...
Let me ask you this. Again, I'm going to ask you this exact same question I just asked Mr. Potter. This is an appeal from summary judgment. The most important things that are separate are the things that we can find as a matter of law versus the things that a jury normally finds, all right? Now, normally, the question of whether a police officer, based on the information they have in their possession, acted reasonably is a question of fact to the jury. In order to affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment, we have to find that, given what happened in this case, including the fact that Officer Stockman didn't even visit the house to see if there was a house there, all right, that no jury could possibly find that that was unreasonable. Okay, is that what you're saying, that no jury could possibly find that anything happened in this case was unreasonable?
Well, yes, and these cases often turn on questions of law. We can assume the facts as the plaintiff wants them to be, as the appellant wants them to be. We can assume that someone named Caitlin Nichols called Dawn Stockman.
Or someone who professed to be Caitlin Nichols.
Someone who professed to be Caitlin Nichols
called in. So why doesn't she at least ask for a driver's license?
Well, and we can also assume that it really wasn't Caitlin Nichols.
Right.
Although that would be a question of fact. But for the purposes of summary judgment, we are assuming, and Judge Sturman did assume, that it really wasn't Caitlin Nichols. The question then becomes, on those facts, is it ever possible that this warrant did not comply with the Fourth Amendment? And it is a question of law because there is no constitutional requirement for Ms. Stockman to have gone and verified the identity. There is not one case there from anywhere in the country.
So let me ask you this. I can call the Metro Police today and say that Mr. Christian killed a drifter and there's a body in his garage. And based on, and by the way, my name is Tom Cruise. And based on that tip alone, the police can now get a warrant and go into your garage?
No, not necessarily.
Why not?
Because there are other factors that play into the totality of the circumstances. The ultimate test in any Fourth Amendment case, especially a search and seizure case, is we have to look at the totality of the circumstances. Merely because an informant calls in anonymously is not in and of itself insufficient to not support probable cause. In this case, we have an actual name of a person, and it turns out that it wasn't that person, but we also have a lot of other circumstances that played into the decision to ask for the warrant. We have the tipster calling in and giving her name, yes, but the tipster also gave the name of an address.
Your address off the internet.
Sure.
Off the assessor's record. So if I know your address, I call in and say, this is Tom Cruise calling from Hollywood, and there's a dead body in Mr. Christian's house, and he lives at 123 Main Street. Is that enough for a warrant?
No, not necessarily. But there are so many more facts here. The tipster called in with an address, with the name Judy Palmieri, with the fact that Judy Palmieri owns a pet store. Those are all basic facts that were verified, corroborated by Dawn Stockman. So it wasn't a suspicious name like Tom Cruise. It wasn't Jane Doe calling in. It was a very specific name that was given, and then that person gave very specific information that could have been verified and was verified.
But none of that's criminal information. So if I just know totally innocuous information about Judy Palmieri, where she lives, she owns a pet store, and she lives at 123 Main Street, what about that is evidence that I know anything about a crime?
But again, there was so much more to the phone call. The phone call said very specifically, I was in the house. I helped Miss Judy Palmieri move boxes. I was in the garage. I saw dogs in the garage. I saw that they didn't look healthy.
Right, but here's the question. None of that was corroborated. The only part that's corroborated is the non-criminal stuff. She checked the address, she checked her name, she owned a pet store. That's right. Totally innocuous information that I can get off the internet. The stuff about the crime, she didn't corroborate.
Well, she did corroborate that there had been prior calls with regard to Ms. Palmieri.
How do you know they didn't come from the same person?
Well, they go back several years. There was detailed information that Ms. Stockman was able to locate in their computer system that keeps track of these complaints. Again, Ms. Palmieri owns a pet store. She's owned a series of pet stores. There were complaints that were recorded and that were made and that Dawn Stockman noticed when she did her investigation that there had been prior complaints against Ms. Palmieri, not only at this particular address that Caitlin Nichols said there was a current violation going on in, but also at the pet store.
Do you think that there is a different standard with the government here, animal control, obtaining what appears to be more of an administrative warrant for the health and welfare of the animals under a county code rather than going in, and I asked the same question of Mr. Potter, going in on a criminal, we know a crime has occurred or is ongoing, you know, under NRS 453.336, whatever, for drugs. They're walking in, they're ripping up, or not walking in, they're going in with SWAT, they're ripping up pillows, they're going into drawers, they're taking out things.
They're
Isn't this a different kind of warrant if you're just looking for the health and welfare of animals?
Well, let me say this. The Fourth Amendment is the Fourth Amendment. But on the other hand, the Supreme Court of Nevada and the Supreme Court of the United States have taught that it's the totality of the circumstances that we have to look at when we are going back in time and deciding whether or not Judge Williams was okay in signing off on this warrant. So I think the nature of the type of case that it is does play into whether or not the totality of the circumstances are met.
But normally, if there is a demonstrated misrepresentation in a warrant, and in this case, for purposes of summary judgment, we have to assume there was. Obviously, we don't know the ultimate facts. But let's assume for a second that the officer didn't talk to Hayden Nichols. Normally, the effect that a misrepresentation might have had on the magistrate is a question of fact for the jury, is it not?
Not when even that fact, as assumed, is true, still is not enough to state a constitutional claim, which is exactly what happened here. We can assume that it really wasn't Caitlin Nichols that called. That person that called in was not Caitlin Nichols. She was lying. But the question isn't that she was lying. It was the question is, did Don Stockman know that she was lying? Did she have any reason to suspect that that wasn't really Caitlin Nichols? Mr. Potter mentioned Franks versus Delaware. And I think we searched and searched and searched. There's no case out there that's exactly on point where there's a tipster that calls in and the one and only thing that the tipster lies about is her name. But there are cases about confidential informants, and there's cases about other information that is supplied by a tipster that turns out to be false, and other information that is placed into an application for a warrant that turns out later to be false. This is the standard under Franks and then used civilly under other cases. Two tests have to be met to survive summary judgment. Two tests have to be met by the plaintiff. First, was the information that was placed into that warrant, did Don Stockman know and intend to place false information into that application? Or, if there's no knowing and intent, did she act with reckless disregard?
And are those questions of fact or questions of law?
Well, I think those are, it doesn't have to go to the jury because the facts are not in dispute. Those facts are not in dispute. And again, this is the plaintiff's burden to overcome the presumption that the Judge Williams wasn't going to sign a warrant in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, isn't the question itself, if the search warrant, you know, normally the question of the impact that a misrepresentation in a search warrant affidavit has on the magistrate, that's a question of fact. So doesn't the jury get to decide, okay, if the search warrant had been written to say, I talked with someone who purported to be Caitlin Nichols, but I don't know who she is because I never checked her identity. Couldn't a jury say if that had been put in the affidavit that Judge Williams might not have signed this affidavit?
But the test is whether or not Don Stockman intentionally and knowingly inserted information into a warrant that was false, or whether she acted in reckless disregard for the truth. There's no evidence in this case that she did so. Again, Ms. Palmieri herself testified that there's no grudge, there's no personal animus.
Well, it doesn't have to be a grudge. It could be incompetence.
No, it has to be knowing and intentional, or it has to be reckless disregard. So we're getting a little bit into the mind of Don Stockman.
Right.
But it's not a jury decision because there's no evidence in the case that that's what happened. The evidence in the case is that Don Stockman talked to someone named Caitlin Nichols. Caitlin Nichols gave her information that was verified and corroborated. And she didn't suspect in any way, shape, or form that this was not Caitlin Nichols. Now, the second part of the test, though, hasn't been met either under Franks versus Delaware. Not only do we need knowing an intent or reckless disregard for the truth, but the plaintiff also had to demonstrate that without that information, the warrant wouldn't have been issued. So in other words, let's just say that Don Stockman, it's not Caitlin Nichols. You have to remove the name Caitlin Nichols from the warrant and from the application for the warrant, and then Judge Sturman or Judge Williams or this court would have to decide that there still isn't enough to find probable cause. And that can't happen here because the name Caitlin Nichols is immaterial. It doesn't matter that it was Caitlin Nichols or Tom Cruise or anybody else.
Oh, wait. Now you're saying, okay, let's pretend that this is an anonymous tip who didn't give a name.
Sure.
Nothing's corroborated. That's still enough for a search warrant?
If it's an anonymous tipster and nothing whatsoever is corroborated, then that's probably not going to meet the totality of the circumstances test. And that's the Illinois versus Gates case. In Illinois versus Gates, again, Mr. Potter has cited to that. The Supreme Court went back to a more practical approach to
the law of search procedure. Right. The test used to corroborate either the identity of the informant or the information they provide. And Illinois versus Gates says it's no longer two separate tests. It's a totality.
Sure.
But there's still this sort of counterbalancing thing. If you know a lot about the informant and you know they're reliable, then you don't have to corroborate their information as much. If you know a lot about the crime, there's a ton of corroboration, 10 eyewitnesses, physical evidence, all that kind of stuff, then it doesn't matter who the identity of the informant is. But in this case, I thought I heard you just say that in this case, even if the warrant affidavit had said, I don't know who the tipster is, okay, and I also didn't know the crime, that still would have been a good search warrant. I thought I heard you say that.
No. If it had been an anonymous tip, but all the rest of the information that was given, and some of the information was corroborated, then it would still meet the totality of the circumstances test because the only thing that Don had to present to Judge Williams in asking for the warrant was whether there was a fair probability that a crime may have been committed. We're not looking to see whether or not a crime actually was committed beyond a reasonable doubt. That's for later. That's for trial. This standard under the Fourth Amendment to obtain a warrant is very deferential to Judge Williams when he signed that warrant. Was there enough facts looking at the totality of the circumstances to issue the warrant? Now, there was a name here, and there was no way to know that it wasn't really that person without having to actually go get her driver's license. And that's really what the plaintiff needs in this case.
So the difference between an anonymous informant and an identified informant is just giving a name.
Sure.
Is that what you're saying, even if it's a completely made-up name? That in itself moves someone from the category of anonymous to identified?
I think if a tipster calls in and gives a name, under the totality of the circumstances, it's automatically more reliable that there's a name given.
Well, in this time, they also gave their phone number.
Sure.
John spoke with her, called back the phone number. So this person can be identified, so to speak. It's not anonymous. It's still somebody who, if they go back and actually investigate, could still be subject to perjury.
Sure.
If they're caught as far as sending off a false report, so
sure.
to speak. But this was, it appeared to be more than
much more.
An anonymous tip.
Well, right. And again, looking at the totality of the circumstances, would Judge Williams rather sign off on a warrant that where the information comes from an anonymous tipster or from a tip that comes in from someone who has given their name? And I think that it's more reliable when the name is given. And unless Don Stockman had some reason to suspect that the name wasn't accurate, there's no reason to delve further into that particular issue because what her name is doesn't really matter.
But isn't the question of what Judge Williams would have done if he had known the truth itself a question of fact for the jury?
No,
is it not? Isn't there a Second Circuit case that says exactly that the impact that a misrepresentation would have had on the magistrate is a question of fact for the jury to decide?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Again, and if I can maybe just conclude here for a second or two, the question presented is whether or not, under the totality of the circumstances, looking back to what Judge Williams did, was there a substantial basis for him to have issued that warrant? It's not a complete de novo review. We're reviewing Judge Sterman's decision de novo, but what Judge Sterman was doing was reviewing Judge Williams' issuance of that warrant for substantial basis. Did he have enough facts to go with to satisfy the Fourth Amendment? And on the facts that he was presented with back then, there certainly was, with or without the name. The name becomes totally irrelevant. You can assume that the name is false. You can assume that the name isn't even there. The rest of the facts are more than sufficient to establish probable cause.
Okay.
I see my time is up, unless there's further questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christian.
Thank you.
Mr. Potter, you have a short reply.
I do, Your Honor. In terms of Judge Silver's question about whether it's strictly administrative, this was prosecuted. The case was filed in the Justice Court. We then filed a motion to suppress. The DA's office did not contest it based upon the facts that were submitted.
Didn't they move to dismiss pursuant to statute?
They did.
Okay, because in the briefs you said that Judge Tobiasen granted a motion to suppress. When we went back over the record, that was incorrect. Your representations to this court were not true.
Well, I don't know that it was a situation where they did not contest the situation and the case was dismissed. But
any prosecutor can move pursuant to statute to dismiss for any given reason. Well, we don't know if Dawn Stockman just didn't appear at her.
No. It was done at a hearing. I filed the motion. So
right, you filed a motion to suppress.
Yes, and so they didn't respond to it. We went
right
to court that morning. They had not responded to it. They agreed to dismiss the case at that point. The judge dismissed the case. And so it's not a situation when you say, well, there's an egregious circumstance normally when you have a criminal prosecution for other things. My client was prosecuted. She's been repeatedly prosecuted for many, many years. All cases have always either been dismissed, either on appeal or at time of trial. And those are the records that are before the court. And so when you look at all the things that
happened. But they're really conspiring to get her. Why
didn't
they go and get her at the justice court hearing?
Because the DA looked at it.
Speculate that suddenly a light bulb came out and they said that they're just not going to fight you. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people don't go forward.
There are a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons, and that's why it becomes a factual question on all of this, but what Judge Tao was talking about is the same thing. It's a factual question. We cited the Morgan versus
Lozier
case. Well,
let me ask you, I kind of grilled him for a few minutes on what are the questions of fact and questions of the law, because, you know, sometimes in a 1983 action, they're all blurred together and you have to separate them.
Right.
So I asked him to identify the questions of fact. So just because something's a question of fact doesn't mean that summary judgment can't be granted. What are the factual disputes here?
The facts in dispute are as to, one, the identity of the individual. Secondly, as to whether, in fact, the representations were correct.
I mean, I think the state's argument is even conceding that the person who called lied about the name. They're
right.
Saying even conceding that. Okay, we're taking that off the table. We're agreeing that the fact we disputed. We're
right.
Giving you that. Okay? So what else is disputed here?
The dispute is as to whether there was animals on the property that were sick, fecal matter, mats. The proof's in the pudding, judges, is what they're trying to argue. We did a search and we found some. Well, we didn't find what was in here. There wasn't a situation that the information was correct. What it shows is that there was an intent by this individual to harass, vex my client, Mrs. Palmieri, and that's what occurred here. But those are factual questions, not only Anaheim versus Drummond, but the Morgan case, which is an arrest case, all talk about the fact that these are factual questions. When you pull all those facts out, you have a Swiss cheese affidavit. There's a huge hole in it, and there isn't enough for probable cause
But even conceding that, just because an affidavit is bad doesn't mean that it was unreasonable or made in reckless disregard. What about this affidavit, even conceding that it's a bad affidavit? Because I think his argument is even giving you that. What about this is reckless?
The reckless part, Your Honor, is the failure to corroborate any of the information, and it was done pursuant to a policy. And as I stated earlier, Gillette versus Delmore then allows us to hold the county in because she did it pursuant to the de facto policy that they don't do any investigation. And she testified it was as to complaints. But not every complaint arises to the fact that you're going to go into someone's house with a warrant. And so I mean, the lack of concern about an individual's rights when you're getting a search warrant and you're going in here and invade this individual's privacy, that's what the Fourth Amendment is all about, to protect the interests of the individual. And that didn't occur here. There's a recklessness, which is the other prong in Franks versus Delaware that we can show, because they don't care about the information. And it wasn't a situation where they went in and said, you know, Judge Williams, this is an anonymous tip. No, this is an individual that's supposed to have hired, worked there. I mean, there could have been contacts as to business, verification. There is none of that. And I would submit to Your Honor that based upon that, those are the facts that must be looked at in the light most favorable to the plaintiff.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Potter, very much. Excellent work by both counsel. We appreciate it, and we understand the case a lot more. It will stand submitted for a decision.